Welcome back to the Daily Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Woods. I am joined by Daily Thunder beat writer, Brandon Rabar. Brandon, how are you?
I am fantastic. Ready to talk about an exciting Thunder trade deadline.
Absolutely. And Brandon, we're not alone tonight. We have a special guest back, calling him back up from the bullpen. It's our good friend, Spencer Davis. Spencer, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here to do a little deadline show. Wish there would have been, you know, more to talk about from today with the Thunder, but you know, the Miami pick was nice, and there's plenty of stuff league wide.
Let's start there, Brandon. What were your thoughts on the trade Oklahoma City made with Miami?
Well, at first, I'll be completely honest. You know, I watch the NBA all the time, not just the Thunder, but all NBA, and I'm, you know, feel like I'm pretty in tune with all teams. But as soon as I saw it, I had to Google who KZ Akpala was. And I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right, because I've only read it, you know, but I haven't heard it. That was my first thing. I was like, who is this? But then once I saw the pick protections and what happened there, I think it was a great trade for the Thunder. I mean, you go from a pick that was most likely going to be like 25 to 30 next year. Now all of a sudden you're looking at 2025 or 2026. It's more likely going to be 15 to 30 in 2025 or 1 through 30 in 2026 when Jimmy Butler is 35, 36 years old, making $52 million. So I think it was absolutely worth kicking the tires on a young player, maybe if they don't waive him, and then giving up a late second rounder. They got 3 second rounders that year, and it'll be the worst of those three. It's a smart little trade, but it could end up being the difference of getting like the number 27 pick or the number 16 pick. That's a great move.
Spencer, I think your text to us right after was, I'm bummed we only have 2 first-round picks next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, the 2023 draft is loaded, especially at the top. But that is, I'm picking nits there, right? Like, the Heat pick was never going to be that good of a pick. I think it was lottery protected anyway. It just would have been a nice, you know, other trade asset to have to move up in next year's draft. But now, you know, the upside is much greater on this pick. So, yeah, I agree with Brandon that overall it's a good deal. But, you know, if it was perfect, you know, I do think that the Thunder over the next year should be trying to get more, you know, darts to throw at the 2023 draft dartboard.
The day definitely shaped up like a bomb went off about 1:20 Eastern with the Harden Ben Simmons deal. But then it got kind of quiet the last like 10, 15 minutes, which sometimes it does. And then usually, you know, those last, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, even before and just a couple minutes after the deadline, usually there's quite a few announced deals. And I kept waiting on the Oklahoma City did find someone to take Kenrich Williams, and they did find someone to take Mike Muscala, and they didn't. And, I will hand up. I think keeping those guys, if they're going to play them, is bad business for their intentions this year for the pick that they have. Like, nothing is more important. We've said this so many times, but nothing is more important than their own pick, regardless of the Clippers picks, the Clippers pick this year and down the road. Like, the one you can control is your own. And this felt like kind of a letdown that they weren't able to move off of those guys. I know that a lot of fans love those guys, and they are like, they're quality dudes. That's the problem. You know, like, they're quality players, and they bring a lot to the locker room. So what were y'all's thoughts on those two guys surviving the deadline?
I wasn't surprised by Mike Muscala, only because he's hurt right now. And I'm not sure, you know, after the All-Star break, you know, is he going to get the ankle surgery? Is he going to play? That made sense. I feel like they wanted to keep one of these two guys. They value them so much. just like locker room, vet experience, leaders. They're both such quality guys, like you said, on the court, but off the court as well. You're right. Anytime they play those guys, like plus minus, the Thunder, you know, perform pretty well when either or both of those guys are on the court. And then you put those two guys with SGA, Dort, and Giddey, it's actually a really competitive team, which could hurt the Thunder in the long run. So will we see the Thunder, you know, sit them out more games than the last part of this season? I'm not sure. Play fewer minutes. As far as Kenrich Williams goes, again, a fan favorite, also an organizational favorite. They love him, and he said himself he wants to retire here. And look, if the Thunder are a playoff team in another 2 years, 3 years, and these guys are still around, they can help. Obviously, they'd be great bench role guys. They absolutely would be. So I get it from that standpoint of wanting to keep them around. But with Kenrich, he really felt like maybe it was an opportunity lost, as much as I'm happy to keep them, because it feels like they could have got some value out of him, because there's not many guys making $2 million this year, next year, for all these teams that are cap strapped that want to do something in the playoffs. You can't get a guy as good as Kenrich Williams for $2 million. So it felt like there's a chance to take on a bigger contract, a worse player, and give out Kenrich Williams and maybe get a late first round pick or a protected first round pick. But again, I get keeping them as well. So, but it does seem like a little bit of an opportunity lost, because it could end up hurting your pick more than anything else.
You know, I think a few weeks ago I would have agreed with you, and I still do in a lot of ways, but it's just not something that I'm particularly worried about in terms of, like, we all love Kenrich. He's a really good role player. He's a winning player, but he's not really going to move the needle that much, right? And I know the margins are thin, you know, like one or two extra wins could really end up being costly. But I think that what the Thunder showed, you know, the organization showed last year, is that down the stretch, they're kind of willing to do what it takes to, you know, to play the game, right? To play the lottery game. Every team does it. You know, Houston hasn't played John Wall all year. You know, you're going to start to see Orlando and Detroit and other teams like that, and Indiana and Portland, especially, like in San Antonio, apparently, like all these teams are going to start sitting guys after the All-Star break, or, you know, playing guys in short rotations. And Oklahoma City is going to do that too. And so at the end of the day, I'm confident that, you know, the cushion that the Thunder have built up on a lot of those teams, and, you know, just the math is going to even out here, where, you know, the Thunder's record is a little bit better than what their net rating says it should be. I think you're going to start, and especially for as long as Shea is out for the next 2 weeks, it's going to be really hard for this team to string together wins. I know they just won three in a row a little bit ago, but there are some other circumstances there. I mean, look at the last game that the Thunder played against the Toronto Raptors. It was not close, and so that may have played into this a little bit. But Alexei Pukasevsky, who didn't even play in the previous game, and Teo Maledon, who's been one of the worst NBA players over the last 2 years, period, both played more minutes than Josh Giddey. Okay, that's probably not going to happen every game, but to me, that's a signal that, you know, they're not just going to let the Thunder front office is not just going to let this team string up enough wins to where it takes them out of the top, you know, four or five in the lottery. Like, you know, I think everybody is still aligned on what the goal is, and the fact that Kenrich and Muscala are still here, I don't think that changes much.
They're about to head out on a three-game road trip. They get the James Harden, Joel Embiid 76ers for their first dance together. Are we for sure that James will play tomorrow night?
No. In fact, I'd be surprised if he does. I mean, he's okay. Been nursing this hamstring, which I think is at least partially. I know, but it's at least like a little bit real, right? Like, you know, he did have a hamstring last year. They're going to ease him in to keep up appearances regardless.
Right. That's what I think will happen. I think that he'll end up not playing just because, you know, the first day after he's traded, after he supposedly had a hamstring injury that he plays, he'll probably sit that one out and then play the next one, is what I would guess.
Well, and he did have the hamstring last year. But, you know, and the other thing is that Kyrie, I'm acting like he's still in the Nets. I don't know. Are they there? Is Joel's healthy right now, right? I mean,
yeah,
as far as we know. So, I mean, but they've been playing well even without Simmons these last few weeks.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know,
Philly's a solid team.
I mean, they're good.
Maxie's solid.
Almost Thunder player Tobias Harris has been playing really well, too. So, between yeah. Embiid and Harris and Tyrese Maxey, also almost Thunder player. Should have been a Thunder player had not Mike Muscala hit a game-winning three for no reason in the bubble. Then they got some good players. Sorry, I just went to dark place. So I was thinking about the Mike Muscala
shot. Hey, if it makes you feel any better, Brandon, there's no way Presti would have taken the player that we all wanted him to take anyway. So it wouldn't have mattered.
True.
Oklahoma City then goes to Chicago, who, despite some injuries of their own, that team is so explosive. And shout out Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
And then they go – that's a back-to-back. And then they go to New York to play the Knicks, the lowly Knicks. That'd be a nice night to sit Dort. That might be a nice night to do a few different things.
Josh getting minutes restriction, right?
Yeah, totally. Spencer, we were talking before we jumped on here about Houston. They did some things today that made us think they might pass Oklahoma City, or they at least could. What are your thoughts on what Houston did today?
I mean, look, I think Houston and even to a lesser extent, Orlando are catchable. You know, I think the instinct, because of what happened last year, and not necessarily at the end, but although I guess at the end with what happened in the Clippers game, but the instinct is to look, you know, in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range to figure out, oh, okay, who's going to catch Oklahoma City, when I think there's still a chance that OKC can move up into that 3 or 2 spot. You know, those teams have shown a little bit of signs of life here. You know, Orlando's won 5 of their last 10. Detroit has lost 6 in a row, but I think before that they were playing better. And I think they've had some injuries that, you know, hopefully they'll get some guys back soon. But to get back to your question, yeah, Houston didn't trade anybody, right? I mean, they traded Daniel Theis for Dennis Schroeder, which is probably an upgrade. They still have Christian Wood. They still have Eric Gordon, who's been great all year. Rookies typically have pretty good, you know, second halves of the season, right? So like Şengün and Jalen Green, a lot, you know, could end up being better. Especially Şengün, he shouldn't be hitting a rookie wall at this point because they don't really play him. So, you know, I mean, we'll see, but I think that it's, for as a Thunder fan, like, it's best case scenario, Houston got better with adding Schroeder, assuming they choose to keep him, and they didn't add any future assets. So, or any future assets of consequence. Did they get a pick from Boston?
No, they gave up a pick.
They
gave up a pick.
Boston, okay. No, Boston gave a first.
Oh, did Boston give a first?
Oh, I'm sorry. Boston gave a first in the Derek White deal. My bad.
I was going to the Rockets gave up the second rounder. That's what I thought was hilarious.
Which, by the way, is a fleecing of San Antonio. Why is Derek White available for a first-round pick in this draft? For like a 20s pick, it's infuriating. I mean,
there were a few young guys that I was very like, I found myself over the last couple of days saying, that's all it took to get Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
That's all it took to get so and so. Like, it didn't seem like, I mean, even Sabonis, like, that just didn't seem, sorry.
Wow.
Halliburton, sorry.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't seem like, it seemed like that's all that it took to get a few of these guys. It's just, it was an interesting market for sure. Like, not a lot of buyers, it seems like.
Like, Jalen Smith is going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2 months. So I get it. It would have been nice to kick the tires on him, and maybe you can kind of like sell him on culture and he wants to stick around. But yeah, as far as the Kings and Pacers go, I mean, obviously Halliburton, you have so much more control over for so much longer. But Sabonis is the better player right now. I get it from the Kings standpoint. Like, everybody kind of dragged the Kings on that one. But I think Sabonis and Fox are going to be a really, really nice 1-2 punch. And and we could end up seeing, you know, the best version of the Kings we've seen in quite a while. I just want to say, I just felt like Sabonis was just getting underrated in that because he's still the best player in that trade. I get it, though. Halliburton looks really nice, and you can bat him for longer.
I don't know how long we want to spend on that, but I would disagree with that. I would rather have Halliburton.
Like, just period?
Yeah. Like, I think that, well, you know, assuming your goal is to win a championship, I would rather have Halliburton. Because I don't think Sabonis, you know, as a defensive, as a two-way guy, is going to be part of, like, a championship-caliber team at any point. And Halliburton could do that throughout it. Like, you could envision Halliburton in several different roles on that type of team.
I don't know. Like, Halliburton's, like, it's what the potential is. I mean, he's already good, yes. But Sabonis at 25 has already been a two-time All-Star. And you could argue he should have been an All-Star this year as well. Like, I don't like, he's such a good all around player.
The numbers are really good. And like, you know, I could have talked myself into him being on the Thunder at some point. And maybe that'll still happen because Domantas Sabonis is a free agent in 2 years.
Right.
And obviously, you know, is probably going to be available at next year's trade deadline, unless the Kings are in, like, you know, legitimately fighting for the play in at this point next season. But Ryan, break the tie. Who would you rather have?
I mean, for a game played tomorrow, probably Sabonis. But if we're talking about the life of their current deals, like it's easily Halliburton to me. Like,
yeah, well, you get him for like 7 more years, and Sabonis, and
he's
two.
He's so, 20. Yeah. He's 21, and his shooting numbers are unbelievable. He's 6'5". He does a lot of things really well. I mean, he's shooting 40-something% from three. Even higher on catch and shoot, and he's averaging almost 7 assists a game. Like, they're hard to find those types of guys.
And he did all that not necessarily in a great basketball environment.
Totally, that's a great point. Like, I think he's on his way to being really good. And I, like, as soon as the deal happened, like the King, like I would. I think it's important to, like, separate the fact that, like, the Kings got dragged yesterday, not because Sabonis is bad. The Kings got dragged yesterday because they gave up a guy that just is never available. Like, guys like Halliburton are never available for,
you know, who the last one to get traded was? It was James probably Harden. Our friend James.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago. I mean, there's probably, but James is going to, I'm not saying Halliburton's going to be that good. And I don't think you are either, but yeah, I mean, he's awesome. And the killer is that he wanted to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that he tanked his draft stuff to get to 12 to Sacramento or whatever pick they had. And then always talked about wanting to be a leader and to change the culture there. And they traded him for 2 years of Domantas Sabonis. You know, I mean, I did like what they
sounds
got.
Sounds like the Kings.
I did like what they got with DiVincenzo today. I thought they did very well in that very weird four-way deal, but
that was a weird deal.
Yeah,
Ibaka to the Bucks. That was another guy. That was another guy that we had talked about, you know, possibly, you know, having him sent our way at the deadline.
Yeah. He ended up playing well the last few weeks, so he had some value instead of just being salary dumped. I mean, I get the Clippers didn't really get anything back for him, but
on the opposite end of the spectrum, as far as Houston, like, kind of doing some things that encouraged us as far as Oklahoma City passing them, San Antonio, I feel like, became a little scarier today, giving up Derek White. I don't know that Josh Richardson really does much for them. They seem set on, you know, Keldon Johnson, DeJounte Murray. Those guys are very good. And they play a ton. I'd be surprised if, I mean, I think San Antonio is really going to go after, you know, as good a pick as they can down the stretch here.
Has Lonnie Walker been good? I mean, he's another guy that has had some hype in the past. Devin Vassell. They still have Jakob Poeltl, right? They didn't trade him today.
Yeah, they didn't trade him. There's supposedly, like, interest in him and, but it never happened. So between those three, at least they have some capable players in Pop if they decide to try to win.
The Doug McDermott's on this roster.
Yeah. the Thunder play them the last game before the All-Star break at home. That's going to be a honestly a really big game, because after the Spurs, like Ryan said, traded away what they did, Derek White, they're right now, they have 20 wins and the Thunder have 17 wins. That's a big swing, whether the Spurs get 21 or the Thunder get 18. I mean, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's before the All-Star break, so Shea will be out.
Yeah, I guess, are you guys more afraid of San Antonio or Portland?
Well, Portland winning over the Lakers was big. 22 wins, and, you know, they still have Simons, and they have Nurkic. I don't know if Bledsoe is going to stick around or if he'll be a buyout guy. But the five-game cushion is nice. I'm probably more worried about the Spurs.
What's the deal with Josh Hart? Is he going to play?
Oh, right. And Josh Hart. That's
yeah,
right.
He's not a buyout. He's too young to be a buyout guy. We'll keep him.
Yeah, that was a piece that they'll want to – and he's too young to sit. Like, they got to kind of showcase him. Not showcase him. I mean, more so for the fans and anything to show the fans what they got with him. So – here's the deal, and the Wizards winning tonight, because they went through a fire sale, but they've won 25 games. I think 8 games, that's safe. The Knicks, as bad as they are, they've still got 24 wins. That's safe. New Orleans is trying to win now. So then you get into the bottom 8. Portland has 22 wins. The Kings have 21 wins, but they're trying to win. They improved, so you don't have to worry about them. So then you got the Spurs and the Pacers right in front of the Thunder. So that's who you're kind of rooting to lose now. I think for the rest of the season, you're rooting for the Clippers to lose, the Spurs, Pacers. I'm sorry, you're rooting for the Spurs and Pacers to win, and for the Rockets and Magic to win.
And I'm just looking at it now, but Portland got New Orleans is obviously going to try and make that play-in now, which is awesome for the Thunder, but. Portland now has their first round pick this year. And remind me the protections on that is like 1 through 5.
It's tough. Yeah, I think it's 4 or 5. Yeah.
It's like, and then if it's 15 through, if it's like 4 through 15, it goes to Portland. And if it's above 15, it goes to Charlotte. That was a very strange pick.
Yeah, it's very strange. A lot of weird pick machinations.
But as it sits right now, that pick is 9th. So right now, Portland's sitting at 8 and 9.
It's a trade up candidate. I mean, I think that New Orleans pick, if Zion comes back at all, they will. Well, I say that, like, are they going to pass the Lakers? Probably not. So, like, you know, as worst case for Portland, that pick is probably 12th.
Well, you just have to worry about the play. It totally depends on the play-in. The play-in at this point, I think we can say in pretty much set in stone, unless the Kings, you know, surpass the Pelicans, it's going to be the Wolves, the Clippers, the Lakers, and probably the Pelicans. So then it just depends on who wins, you know, because if the Pelicans win, they're in the playoffs, and then they're not a lottery team anymore. So it really just depends on that play-in tournament.
The Kings are only one win back of the Pelicans.
Yeah. I'm going to look at their schedule strength to see who has I feel like the Pelicans might have the tougher schedule. Let me look and see if that's right.
It's hilarious. Those are, I would say, they're 8 and 9.
Exact same schedule strength. Now, New Orleans does have 2 more games left, so that's helpful. They have a couple more chances to pick up a win.
It's funny that those are, in my opinion, the 2 worst run NBA franchises over the last, like, 2 years, basically since the Zion pick. Like, I can't think of anybody that's been worse run than those 2 teams, and they're going to end up fighting for the 10th seed. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, the
Pacers have the 3rd easiest schedule remaining.
which is nice. That
is a blessing. Yeah.
And they do have Tyrese Halliburton and Chris Duarte, and maybe Miles Turner comes back and plays this season. And our old friend Isaiah Jackson that I remember a couple of us. He was killing it before he got hurt.
I have forgotten about that name.
let's do a couple minutes.
I had no idea he was on the Pacers.
Let's do a couple minutes on because this is the first time we've had Spencer with us since right before the season started. So give us your couple like feel like you like big wins personally from the draft and ones that you feel like I already got that wrong.
Oh God, I would need to pull up my board, those draft boards that we made.
I just I was looking through Houston's box score from tonight and just saw Garuba's name at the bottom, and that one made me chuckle because I was very excited about him as well.
We were all in
Garuba. And he can't get any play time at all.
I mean, he ended up going to a bad spot, right?
He did.
They don't really play him. They don't play either of their centers.
I believe I ranted on this podcast right after the draft about how good of a night Houston had. Like they got Şengün and they got Garuba and Josh Christopher. I was so frustrated.
Well, on that note, I think my biggest miss was definitely having Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs ahead of Evan Mobley. I was the only one of the three of us who had that. That's just, you know. That's just wrong. I mean, Brandon got it right.
Yeah.
Evan Mobley is you could tell me Mobley's better than Cade, and I wouldn't argue with you. But I think that's a very clear top two. Scotty Barnes, I would say, is third. And we all had him either fifth or sixth. That I'm willing to forgive a little bit because nobody really had him scoring like he does or like he has been. I mean, I had Trey Mann 35th. That's pretty rough.
what have your thoughts been so far this year on Trey Mann?
Man, he's so much fun. I'm a little bit hesitant to just kind of go all in on him because I still don't really understand what his functioning role is on a really, really good team. And if the Thunder draft Jaden Ivey next year, what does Trey Mann do? The other thing that I would love to see from him is more relocation stuff or running off screens and getting his three pointers off that way. Cause I think that the off the dribble stuff is nice, but that, with Shea and Giddey and the other, theoretically the other guys that are going to be handling the ball on this team in the future, depending lottery dependent, obviously there's just not going to be a whole lot of dribble usage for Trey Mann. I don't think unless he explodes, but
could he be,
if he can run off screens, I mean, that unlocks a whole new thing.
Could he be the Reggie Jackson? Could he be the lead ball handler off the bench?
I mean, he's improved as a passer, I think. But Reggie was better at that and not really Trey's definitely a better shooter than Reggie was at that point in his career. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate the role classification. I mean, their games are different, but I mean, shoot, wasn't Reggie a rookie or second year guy when he won the Memphis series for Oklahoma City? I mean, Trey Mann's going to be in his fifth year by the time we're playing in a series that big, probably against Memphis again. But
I think that was 2014. So, Reggie got drafted in 2012.
That's still the funniest, most ironic thing ever is that the Thunder drafted three Hall of Famers back to back to back. And then they needed Reggie Jackson to score a billion points in game 5 to beat the freaking grit and grind Grizzlies. Can you give me a break?
he saved their bacon. I'll never forget that.
I still did. I mean, I think a lot of Thunder fans, quote unquote, hate Reggie Jackson. I do not. I've never put him in that category because of that Memphis series.
Tears of joy,
Do you not remember how he left?
I don't care. I don't care. I don't care.
He had starting point guard on his shoes. He wrote that while he was still on the team.
I don't care, Brandon.
And he was healthy and doing these 360 dunks in front of his teammates and saying he couldn't play that night.
That was the pettiest. That was one of the pettiest things I can remember. He was nursing some type of ankle injury, and
the day
it was trade deadline day, right? And yep. or maybe like yep. the day before the deadline, and he left his like media scrum after practice, grabbed a ball, and like did a windmill off 2 feet.
I'm not saying I ever want him back. You know, I don't want him back in Oklahoma City, but I'm not putting him in the Patrick Beverley tier of players that, you know, don't really like very much.
Beverley's in a tier of his own. He's in his own tier, so that's kind of a different.
Well,
but Reggie's in that next tier for me.
Speaking of Pat Beverley, his tweet today got quite a bit of run. Did you guys see that?
I saw it. Yeah. I can't even. What a loser.
Richard Jefferson on the NBA show today on ESPN said in response to it, you don't have to get petty if you stay petty.
Look, I mean, we all know that Pat Bev loves to blindside guys when they're not looking, so.
Yeah. I mean, troll on the court, troll on Twitter as well.
I was at the Timberwolves Nuggets game randomly in person about a week ago, and I forgot that Pat Bev played for the Timberwolves, and he got 2 fouls immediately, and I don't think he played the rest of the first half. So that was kind of fun, but he did hit a three at one point. It pissed me off.
Speaking of 2 fouls, I saw someone today say that Daniel Tice already has 2 fouls in his first game back with the Celtics. So funny.
Oh my God.
Twitter was good today. Twitter was good last night after that Portland LA game.
I wish more people had been watching it, but the All-Star player draft thing today was just phenomenal content.
Yeah. That's when the NBA really separates itself. Like there is nothing like watching players have to like choose their either friends or at the moment like frenemies based on what's happening in the league. Well, and it's always Kevin Durant, around the deadline.
It's perfect. I mean, and Kevin Durant isn't even playing in the game. Right. You know, and James Harden might not either if this hamstring thing is real. It's just a totally needless, you know, piece of content that we'll remember forever. Feel very lucky.
It's worth noting that it wouldn't be half of what it is if it wasn't like Ernie and EJ and Charles and Shaq. Like
Chuck saying, "Oh, he got traded. He's healthy now."
Yeah, yeah, he got traded. He's gonna rub some icy hot on it. Like that was so good.
Oh my God.
All right. Where do you guys want to go next? We have so many different directions we can go.
You want to do a Poku update?
Yeah. Yeah, he has seemed to play much better in the last couple of days.
I'm a little worried still.
Oh, yeah.
And by worried, like, you know, I'm still comfortable saying this, even though he has played very well his last two games, probably two of his five best games as a pro. I would not be shocked if they don't pick up his option.
Oh, they're going to pick up his option. They'll
I don't know.
He's still the second youngest player on this team, and it's the youngest team in the NBA. He's like the 13th youngest player in the NBA still. I mean, Sam Presti gave up 3 first round picks basically to Giddey. There's no way they're seeing it through with Poku, especially with him showing some flashes. I mean, yeah.
If he continues to play like this, then I agree that it, you know, those chances are gone. But he played very well 3 games ago, and I forget who they played, but played very well. And then the next game, he was a DNP, and that to me is just a huge red flag that, you know, they might be. I don't know if there's like some maturity stuff there, or, you know, other things that are going on, but it doesn't seem like he's, you know, particularly loved by I shouldn't say that. It just seems like it's been a struggle. Like everything is very hard. You know, he's barely played for the Thunder this year. His G League stats have not been good. I think that, you know, like I said, I'll sum it up. I would not be shocked if they don't end up picking up his option. I think they probably will, but it's to the territory where I would not be shocked if they don't.
I would bet $10,000 that they pick up his option. And I do not even have $10,000. I would go out, get a loan to get $10,000 so I could bet $10,000 that they picked up his option. They're going to.
Spencer, if we could if we could just go ahead and call back to a great Kevin Malone line. If someone offers you $1,000,000 to 1 at anything, you take it.
That's true.
I have already written it down in my phone, made a new note. Brandon Ribar, OKC is 100% picking up Poku's option. Yes. And we might have to make a gentleman's wager here on this show.
Regarding okay. I mean, what do you think, Ryan? I mean, what, like the whole, forget the last two games. The Poku experience is not going well. It's not.
No question. It's, but I wouldn't put it past them, especially if they don't love what happens on lottery night this year, to say we have zero reason to rush that and might as well kick it down the road and see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I would lean towards they'll pick it up because that's kind of been what they do, especially with a guy as young as Poku and someone that they gave up real capital to get, wouldn't surprise me, but I definitely don't feel as strongly as Brandon. I'm not taking out a loan. I would lean towards he'll be around, but I mean, it's nothing that I've seen this year has been encouraging. That's for sure.
He's so far higher on the pecking order though than like they would let go of Théo Maledon first or Isaiah Roby, or, you know, just go down the, like, I would say still, like, if you're like prioritizing, you know, the Thunder's young prospects and kind of how they view them. Obviously you got SGA and Giddy at the top, then you got Dort, then you got Trey Mann, and then probably JRE and Wiggins. And I think Poku might even be above Wiggins. I would put Poku above Wiggins. Poku might be above JRE.
I would not put Poku above either of those.
I was saying the Thunder though, like how the Thunder view them and like what they've invested in them and how they see their potential upside and ceiling and those type of things.
Let me ask
things.
You this: none of us are in the locker room, but do you think Poku is a good teammate? He's 20 years old, so or 19, like however old he is. Like, I'm sure there are some maturity things there, but like, you know, there was a lot of body language stuff with him last year, and you know, there's no reason for him to not be playing a lot. In preseason, I was mad that he didn't start, and it just doesn't seem like he's grown all that much, you know, either physically or, you know, I don't want to say emotionally because it's not that serious, but you know. I think there just needs to be more growth out of him over these next few months. And, you know, they could decline his option this summer. And, you know, he's still under contract for that third year and they could still bring him back. And if he has an amazing third year, they can try to re-sign him. You know,
for reference, because we were talking about those two rookies, JRE has started 36 games this year.
Yeah.
And Wiggins has started 18.
I think the trust level with those two guys, just as people, is clearly much higher. And as players,
Aaron Wiggins is miles past Poku right now on the floor.
Yeah, which is fine. Like Poku's ceiling's higher, right? Like you know, and that's why you take that's why Poku goes 17th, and Wiggins and JRE are both second rounders, and everybody understands that. But it, you know. I don't know, man. Like it's not going well. Is my read from on the outside.
I think that the only thing that the organization has against Poku is the Clippers game to end the season last season when he went off for like 29 points and ruined the lottery odds. I think that's the only, you know, issue the organization has with Poku right now.
Listen, I hope he plays 32 minutes a game for the next, you know, 30 games or whatever it is, just like he did the other night against Philly.
Yep.
But clearly they're trying to set a culture here. And the DNPCD the other night was a red flag. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. But there's been a lot of those this year. It's not just that game. You know, at the beginning of the year.
Go ahead.
Well, just, you know, before the G League season started, he would play like 7 minutes in the first half. And if he didn't play well, he didn't play in the second half, which, you know, it's not exactly – that was right at the beginning of the year. You know, clearly they did not see the growth that they wanted to this offseason, you know, this past offseason, to try to give him some run and to really see what they had. So, you know, apparently they haven't thought that he's ready for that kind of an experiment yet. Maybe will now, but I don't know.
I think from a playing standpoint, like court on the court, you know, affecting the standpoint, he's definitely below all these other guys. And that's why, you know, they wanted to see him in the G League. They want him to get more experience. They want him to be more on court ready. And, you know, this first half of the season up to this point, you know, has been about trying to put out the best product. They didn't have to worry so much about winning games because they got rid of Al Horford and Kemba Walker and George Hill and those guys. And they probably felt like, hey, we can still put our best guys out there, play Kenrich Muscala limited minutes off the bench, still not going to win a ton. It'll be fine while Poku gets experience. What I'm saying is I think the reason that he hasn't been playing is because he's been playing in the G League and things like that is more an on-court thing. I don't know that there's necessarily any sort of character issues or anything like that being the reason why he's not playing. I just think that he's just not as good as the other guys right now, but that's to be expected because he was so raw coming in. Yeah. But I do think that he'll play a lot more from this point on, as you see the team transitioning into exploring the roster down the stretch.
Oh, it's some of my favorite words right there.
It's probably unfair for me to just completely from the outside to, you know, question his character, you said, but the goal has not been to win all year and he still hasn't really played. Right. And again, before the G League season started, he wasn't really playing. And so to me, that's just it's a red flag that maybe it's not character, but there's something that is a little bit off going on there. And at the end of the year, if they don't pick up his option, which I agree is less likely than, you know, I think they're going to end up picking it up. But if they don't, it's not going to be because he has less potential than Aaron Wiggins. It's going to be because they've given up on it, right? I mean, and not necessarily as a basketball player, but maybe they just don't, you know, they just want to take on other projects.
While you were talking, I was filling out a credit card form for Citibank to try to get this $10,000 loan. So sorry, I'm a little.
Okay, let's go to let's finish up on some prospects that you like, Spencer. You spent in your new job. You've spent quite a bit of time studying college basketball, so I feel like you're even more, certainly more qualified to talk about these guys than me. So who do you like? Who do you not like? Let's start with Let's start with your top four, and if you have an order, okay, Go ahead and give it to us.
The top two are for sure in order. It's a tier, and I think it's still Jabari one and Chet two, which if we had this conversation 6 weeks ago, I probably would have still had Paolo in that top two, probably at number one, but his efficiency is starting to worry me a little bit. I still think he'd be really good on the Thunder, and, you know, we'd be excited to have him if the Thunder ended up getting him, because he's kind of an offensive unicorn in the way that, like, he's 6'10", but he's super strong, get to the rim, and he can get to his pull-up. Like, very interesting skill set. And I think he's going to shoot it. Like, the form looks good to me. I'm not terribly concerned. And he's a good passer. I think he's going to be a good defender. But the efficiency has just kind of fallen below what, you know, you can get with Jabari Smith at Auburn. We were talking about Jabari.
Yeah, that's on me. That's on Parker me. I brought him up early.
before we came on the call here, Jabari Parker. Or Chet Holmgren. And Chet has, again, 6 weeks ago, I was much lower on Chet. But he has played very well over the last few weeks and is starting to my big concern at the beginning of the year was he was not moving very well, laterally especially. And I was wondering how that was going to translate. And yeah, it's Gonzaga's conference is not very good, but his movement is just so much better. And it's much easier to see him translating, I think, to being a rim protector in the NBA once he adds a bunch of weight, which is a risk, right? Like he's kind of built like Poku in some ways. The difference is that he's very good at basketball already and not a raw project like Poku was. And Jabari Smith he's getting some Kevin Durant comps. The difference is that he can't really dribble or get to the rim the way that Kevin Durant could even at Texas, but he can really get those pull up and it's very big. It's going to be an awesome shooter. Probably not a center. I'm not sure that him or Paolo are like going to be able to play the five really, unless you're going small ball, like how JRE plays small ball five or Baisley plays small ball five for the Thunder. But I just went, Jaden Ivey would be my fourth guy. So you asked for my top four, who is just, he's really, really good, fun, explosive guard. Although Purdue got, I didn't see what happened, but Purdue lost to Michigan by 109. I don't really know what happened there, but he's awesome. He's super fast, really good in transition, just a great combo guard that can play above the rim and would be a good fit next to Shea, I think. I think those are the consensus top four, right? Like you guys wouldn't throw anybody else in there?
No, for me, it's easily those four. I've got it, Jabari and Chet in their own tier. And then I finally pulled the trigger and put Jaden Ivey above Paolo for me.
Yeah.
I know that the Thunder need a big, but they also need just the best talent and the best shooting. And if it's just a big board without the Thunder mind, I'm just more confident Jaden Ivey's going to be a better pro than Paolo would be. I just don't know. I know that Paolo's going to be solid at the very least. He's going to be a solid player. But if we're looking at like star potential, ceiling, upside, I don't see it in Paolo as much as I do Ivey. So I've got Ivey third. And then I'm still, if Shaedon Sharpe comes out, I'm still very, very high on Shaedon Sharpe. If he does come out, AJ Griffin is sliding up there as well. So, I've got AJ Griffin and Sharpe in that next tier.
Yep. I agree.
I would be very happy with any of those six for the Thunder.
I would probably put Sharpe fifth, which is dangerous, right? Cause like you look at some of the history, the recent history of these, you know, high profile high school kids with a lot of pedigree, like BJ Boston, you know, was a top five guy entering his draft. He ends up going, I think, the 50s to the Clippers. And now he's really good. He's a great prospect for the Clippers, but he's not a top five pick. So like you could take Shaedon Sharpe and that's what happens. Or for that matter, like Hamidou Diallo, similar set of circumstances at Kentucky, five-star guy, ends up going in the second round. He's been a pretty good pro, but not somebody that you would want to take in the top five.
Right.
Or you could get somebody who is just an amazing athlete, which and a great shooter like that. He would be five for me on the Thunder's board.
Same.
Is Keegan Murray too old?
Yeah. I think so.
That's what I thought.
I mean,
he fills it up.
For what the Thunder, like they do not draft older college players besides JRE and Aaron Wiggins. And look, those were second rounders. I think they used the second round as like, hey, these are going to be solid role players no matter what. The upside is limited. But look, JRE and Wiggins came in and they're NBA ready. Yeah, they're not going to be stars. They're better players than Poku right now, but Poku's got the higher upside. And I think that's how the Thunder look at older players. But there's a reason why they drafted Poku, the youngest player, in his draft, and Giddy, the second younger player in his draft, back to back.
Yep.
Spencer, what do you think happened to Jaden Hardy?
He's not. I mean, I haven't watched a ton, but I'm just kind of relaying, you know, what I've been reading. He has never really defended at any level, and so that's an issue. And he just hasn't been very efficient in the G League this year. I think he's actually been better recently. But, you know, again, Jaden Hardy's another guy that, like, if he doesn't play in the G League this year, if he follows the Shaden Sharp path, you know, he's probably like a top six pick, right? Mm. And so that is a little bit scary. If you're thinking about taking a guy like Shaden Sharp, who we should mention is not officially in this draft yet, but I think the reading between the lines expectation is that he will be, but it's a little bit unclear. But yeah, Hardy dropping out is a bit of a bummer. I'm not a big Johnny Davis guy.
Me neither.
I don't
see it with him.
Yeah. Like, I think he could be really good, but he's not a fit on the Thunder. I think the Thunder, this other guard needs to really be just an awesome athlete, in my opinion. And that's like, that's Jaden Ivey and Shaden Sharp.
Which is why Jaden Ivey is just a dream prospect. He's so much that, I mean, we've all kind of said it to each other over the last couple of weeks, but like, he's everything in a guard that Oklahoma City currently doesn't have in his explosiveness. It's crazy. Yeah.
And just an awesome shooter.
Yes.
And can lead the break in ways that like Shea and Lou do not. Would be a great fit.
He's like Russell Westbrook with a jump shot.
Well, hang on.
I mean, you know, I'm saying like when you're looking at like just basic comps, like just this explosiveness and getting to the rim, but then he can also shoot. Obviously, he can't do all the things that Russ does. But you know, when you're talking about prospects, you always look at like, you know, fantasy scenarios. And that's like the easiest way to sum it up. Like Russ's explosiveness and athleticism, but as a really good shooter.
Yeah. Well, the only issue that I would have with that is I think Jaden Ivey is like an 85th, 90th percentile NBA athlete, something like that. Whereas Russ is like literally the best athlete to ever dribble a basketball or the second best behind LeBron. Like it's, you know, it's not linear exactly. Ivy is probably not even as good athletically as John Morant, who's another total freak, but I think most people would say is slightly less athletic than Russ, at least at their respective peaks. Not anymore, obviously. But Benedict Mathurin at Arizona is another interesting sophomore. I don't know that he's really a fit with the Thunder. Ty-Ty Washington, I know Brandon loves Ty-Ty.
I do.
Loves Ty-Ty, loves that wingspan.
Yep.
He's more of a, you know, ball handling point guard that I don't know is necessarily who the Thunder should go after with Giddy and Shea already handling the ball so much, but
he's an old freshman.
He's going to be a good. Yeah, he is. He's 20. If that's right.
Yeah.
Here's my sleeper. And it's funny that he's a sleeper now, but Patrick Baldwin Jr. was supposed to be like a top six pick coming into the year. And it has been just having a horrific season at Milwaukee playing for his dad. Their guard play is just terrible. I mean, it's been atrocious. I think they scored like in the 30s or 40s the other day. Let me see if I can find that. But that guy can shoot and he's 6'10". Like, I don't think he forgot how to shoot all of a sudden. So
let's keep him a secret in that like 12 to 13 range.
Milwaukee is 331st in KenPom. Did you guys even know there were 330 teams in KenPom? Yeah, they scored 39 points against Northern Kentucky yesterday. That is about as rock bottom as it gets. and he, you know, he's not having a good year. He's not shooting the ball well. He's turning it over a lot, I think. But he can shoot. And if he can play a little bit of defense and run off screens, play a different role than he has been at Milwaukee, it might be an interesting experiment.
Anthony Davis at Kentucky averaged 4.7 blocks. Does anybody want to guess how many Chet Holmgren averages?
Isn't it something like 3.8 or something?
Yes, and per 36, it's 4.7.
Nice.
That's crazy.
He's nuts. He really is. Like, kind
and
of.
Yeah, and he can shoot.
He's more than I thought he was going to be as a college player already.
Well, you know what's funny? Like, coming into the season, he was the guy. Like, you know, Paolo kind of took it. Now Jabari Smith has taken it. But, you know, Chet Holmgren, he had all the hype. Then everybody's like, wait, no. He's like really skinny. Forget this guy.
What he got? Do you remember that game against Duke that they played him in November? Paolo Paolo actually missed most of the second half of that game with cramps. But in the first half, it was stunning. These two guys even playing the same sport? Like, it just took Chet like 6 weeks to figure out college basketball. And now he has. I think he is a guy, he needs to do it in March. He needs to string together at least two or three good games. Gonzaga is going to be a one seed. So he should be able to do that. I mean, they beat up on a pretty good BYU team the other night. Their conference is not as bad as it used to be. It's not horrific or anything.
Brandon, Chet hasn't missed on grab and go situations.
I mean, it's insane.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts. I really, really like him. If I had the number one pick, I would take Jabari Smith Jr. because I'm more confident that his game will translate and I'm not worried about the physique and things like that. But if I were to say who has the highest ceiling in this entire draft, I would say it's Chet Holmgren. I mean, like, he could have potentially an Evan Mobley type impact just based on his offense, defense, overall skill set, body, all those things. So I would be really, really tempted to take Chet number one, but I would probably go the little bit safer, but still really, really high ceiling round of Jabari Smith Jr. But I wouldn't be surprised if Chet ends up being the best player in this draft. The guys I'm most excited about by far and away are those two and Jaden Ivey. But the good thing is I feel like there's six guys I would feel really good about the Thunder taking, and that's like we've discussed, Jabari Smith Jr., Chet, Paolo, Jaden Ivey, Shaedon Sharpe, and AJ Griffin. So, I mean, when you get to six, I mean, that's where the Thunder picked last season. And that, to me, gives you like a little leeway. Like, I'm not going to freak out if the Thunder don't get a top four pick, even though that's where you want to be, just because I feel comfortable about a couple other guys possibly having a really high ceiling. We haven't talked about AJ Griffin. Am I the only one that's really high on AJ Griffin?
We were actually, Brian actually talked about him off air before you joined us. We like him. I think there's some athleticism concerns. Is that right, Ryan? I don't want to take your words.
Yeah, I described it as like he seems like he has very heavy legs, not in a good way. Like just always, he's always being closely guarded. And that's just in the good plays. Like that's in me watching highlights. It feels like he's a little slow. I love the fact, like if he wants to come shoot in the mid 50s from three on my team, all day long, you come on over, brother. But I do feel like it's if you want him to do anything else, especially at the next level, I'm kind of concerned, but I'm hand up. That could change quickly. Like maybe I just haven't watched enough, but like what I've seen of him, it looks like off the dribble, like a struggle sometimes just to get by guys that are like flying at him, like guys that he should just blow by, you know what I mean? Guys that he should be able to pump fake and go by easily are like still on his hip by the time he gets to the rim.
He's going to be a guy that is a very much a perimeter player. Like tonight against Clemson, he took seven shots, five of them were threes and he made four of them. Like he can have bigger games than that. Like that'll play. Four out of five, it's 80%. That's more than a passing grade as a three-point shooter. But, I think he had almost 30 the other night. But then the next game, that they lost against Virginia, it was much quieter. So it's a little bit up and down with him, which is fine. He's a freshman. But I would differ a little bit with Brandon in that, like, if AJ Griffin is the highest pick that the Thunder have this year, I think that's a failure. Because I don't think that he's, like, necessarily has all-star potential. I mean, maybe he does, but I see him more as like a very, very high level role player, which frankly is, and maybe we're about to have a fight, but like, frankly, that's how I see Josh Giddey. So, I feel like Brandon's going to, we don't have our cameras on, but I feel like Brandon might be about to put down another $10,000 here.
Well, I will say I was higher on Josh Giddey before the Thunder, way before the Thunder ever drafted him. So I've been a Josh Giddey guy for a long time. So so I'm not going to fight you just because he's the Thunder player now. I'm just going to fight you because I've been high on Josh Giddey for a long time. No, I think I don't think it's any coincidence that, you know, night after night after night, we're seeing Josh Giddey's name mentioned with LeBron and LaMelo Ball and Russell Westbrook and all these guys. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as those guys. He's not going to be as good as those guys, but consistently he's just putting up numbers at this age and at this stage in his career that, you know, just from an all around skill set, like baseline, his rebounding and playmaking are already special. And his scoring is coming around quicker, I think, than anybody saw coming. And his IQ, work ethic, all those things. I just think that combination, is he going to be an all-star? I don't know. I don't know if he'll even be an all-star. Maybe, maybe not. But I'm just saying, like, if he is a role player, we're talking, like, supreme level type role player. Like, so, you know, and if you get that with the number six pick, that's great. Just because number six pick is volatile unless you're picking in the top three or four, you know, even then it can be volatile. So if you pick somebody who like at this point is doing what Josh Giddey's doing and he's the second youngest player in the NBA, it's such a huge win. Now back to AJ Griffin. I'm with you. Actually, I agree. Like when I look at like the superstars in this, I still think you want one of those top four guys. I'm even a little bit worried about Paolo.
But
because I view AJ Griffin almost like I view Shaedon Sharpe and Paolo, I just think there's a drop off after AJ Griffin. Like that to me is like when I would get worried. Like I'm not worried about AJ Griffin at least being like a really, really good role player in the NBA. I'd start to worry if the best player that the Thunder got were guys after AJ Griffin and Shaedon Sharpe. Then I'm like, I don't know if these guys will even like we're looking at, you know, just a different level of player.
If the Thunder take Nikola Jovic at like number seven, I think we're, I think, you know, it was not a very good year.
It's not
worth it. No, I agree. I just want to quickly talk about Giddey for another minute here because I kind of slandered him there. totally agree. Awesome value at number six. I think that he's like a better version of like Draymond Green offensively. You know, I think he's going to end up being a better scorer. Or certainly a more willing scorer than at least Draymond has been the last few years. And is a more skilled passer, maybe not a smarter player overall, but I don't know, maybe he'll get there. But, you know, Draymond is all time in some of those areas. But defensively, which is another area where Draymond is like one of the best ever, Josh is going to be like struggle to be average. And I don't like the shooting. I'm not that convinced that it'll ever be awesome. If he can get it to where it's, you know, he's shooting like 35% from three, then like that's probably a win, but it's probably not an all-star unless he's like the third best player on a team that wins 57 games, right? Like that's probably his path to all-star appearances. And if he's like, I'll say this, if he's, whenever he's like 26 years old, if he's the Thunder's fourth best player, I think the Thunder are making the finals. And I think that should be the goal. For Josh to be your third, fourth, fifth best player, something like that. And I, you know, AJ Griffin again could be sort of in that interesting mold where he's just like a really high level role player, but probably never going to be an all-star.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think that's all fair. Josh Giddey is already impacting winning at this age, you know, on a team that's, you know, void of much talent, you know, for the most part, you know, if we were looking at like average to above average players, most nights the Thunder have five of those guys. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Lou Dort, Mike Muscala, Kenrich Williams, and Josh Giddey. And somehow they find ways to be really, really competitive. And Josh Giddey is a big part of that at this age. Like that, that's what gets me. Like he's going to improve. I mean, you know, rookies don't usually impact winning that much. And obviously, the Thunder are losing a lot, but the wins that they do have, Josh Giddey plays a big part. And the games where, you know, they're really, really close, competitive, and it's a near win, Josh Giddey is making an impact. And it's like in big moments too, clutch situations, whether there's shots or passes or rebounds, some guys just have that it factor and you see it and it's tangible. You can't really put it in a box score, and Josh Giddey just kind of has it.
Yep. I mean, I it's clearly been a home run. I mean, I think he's going to be first team all rookie. If Herb Jones doesn't take a spot, apparently.
Yeah. But give me a break.
And he's younger than Chet.
What? Right.
Is he really? Yeah.
Josh Giddey is younger than a lot of these prospects coming out in this rookie class. I mean, he is really, really young. I mean, he's younger than Chet. He's younger than Johnny Davis.
He's younger than Jaden Ivey.
Yeah.
Davis and Ivey are both sophomores, so that makes more sense.
Right.
But still,
obviously.
It's impressive. He's right around the same age as Paolo.
Right. Yep.
Man, Chet is held back a year and he's still that skinny, huh?
One second. I'm going to make sure I give you the right thing.
Yeah, Josh Giddey is 1 month older than Paolo.
Yep, 1 month.
Oh, were you doing the same thing?
It's the same exact thing. 1 month and 2 days.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, very telling. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, because we talk about these rookies, like, you know, what they need to improve on, what they need to work on, and like what you see the potential possibly being. Josh Giddey's already like making an impact and winning right now, the same age or younger than a lot of these guys. It's crazy.
I think it's very, very, very hard to project the ceiling of Josh Giddey right now. Like he's just so freaking good.
I'm just the athleticism thing is just, and maybe because we haven't really seen it, right? Like, I'm not going to be the 10,000th podcaster to compare him to Joe Ingles, but like, that's probably the best player the NBA has had in recent years with his like athletic profile, right? And Joe Ingles is really, really good. And I think Josh Giddey will be better than what Joe Ingles has been. But is that an all-star? Is that a superstar? Right? I mean, we haven't seen it.
I mean, I will say this, like, you know, superstars so many times are gauged by their shooting ability and their defensive ability. And those are the two biggest question marks on Josh Giddey right now. So along with the athleticism, like you said, like,
right.
It is kind
does
of
he
funny.
Dunk
like,
it? Does he have cool dunks or not? No. Okay. No.
Right. But you see, he's just so crafty. Like he finishes at the rim. I hate to say sneaky athleticism because we all know, you know, the connotations of that, but he doesn't seem athletic. Like you said, we've talked about his athleticism, but he seems to beat a lot of guys off the dribble. He's able to attack and finish in small spaces around, you know, defenses that you wouldn't expect, whether it's a spin move, a drive. You know, like, he's such an interesting, fascinating, different type of players. And I think that's why it's kind of hard to gauge, like, You watch him playing and you look at his weaknesses and you're like, how is he already so good? Like, how is he this good? But it's because of all the things that he does well. He does really, really well. And there's a lot to be said about court vision and IQ and playmaking.
I want it to be on the record that if Josh Giddey had lower hips and an ass that that Spencer would think he's going to be an all-star like 10 times over. Let it be known.
The high hips is really a concern. I'm not going to comment on the other.
It's a legitimate, like that, like, but in all seriousness, that's a legitimate thing. The high hips is a concern.
You know, his handle sucks, right? Like, it's, you know, he can kind of get by guys sometimes, but usually it's if he has a running start coming off the screen, right? Like, for the most part, when he's getting to the rim, that's what's happening. He's running off the screen, he's catching the ball, and he's using his eyes to, you know, divert the defender and he gets to the rim, or it's in transition. And I agree with Brandon. He's a very good finisher at the rim. I think he uses his physicality very well, which playing in New Zealand or Australia very much helped him with that, because that's a grown man's league. But yeah, man, like the high hips thing is not great. I don't want to say I wish he was shorter, but in some ways, like, if he could get a little bit lower to the, you know, if he could get a little bit lower center of gravity, I think it would help him a lot. But I'm, you know, I'm not exactly Drew Hamlin out here. Like, I hope he makes 7 All-Star teams. Like, I don't know. I hope I'm dead wrong, but like, we just haven't seen it.
Well, before we go, Spencer, you have to say 2 nice things about Josh Giddey.
I just, come on. I just said, can I say some nice things about the 2023 draft class?
Sure.
Because I don't know when I'm going to be on again. Probably closer to the draft. The 2023 draft is where we should be focused, in my opinion. Victor Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, Derek Whitehead, I think that's how you say his name, and Amari Bailey are all in next year's draft. All those guys, frankly, might go ahead of anybody in this class. Especially, if I'm confident saying that Wembanyama and Scoot would go 1-2 in this draft class. And frankly, may have gone 1-2 even if you loop in last year's class. I mean, they're, from all indications, are that those two guys are on a different level.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Mobley, you know, maybe Mobley or Cade are in there, but I think for sure those two guys, if you could pick, you know, if the Thunder get the #1 overall pick and they could take any draft prospect in the entire world, regardless of age, it would be one of those two guys. And so I think the goal here, you know, we all want to get like 2 top 5 picks in this draft. If the Clippers would cooperate with us for the last 30 games here or so. But I think the bigger prize is in 2023, which is a little scary because, you know, if you don't hit then, you don't hit this year, then like you're probably going to have to trade Shea, which would suck. But I think that is the path to getting like a bona fide superstar is tanking one more year, having the best possible odds for the 23 draft, because that's where the MVPs are.
And that, I mean, we could see a dumping of those future picks in order to ensure one of those dudes.
Yes. But like, I mean, we saw it last year. I mean, the Thunder couldn't move up from 6 to 3. So,
yeah,
you know, if all goes well for those two guys, you know, over the next 16 months, however long it is, like you're probably not going to be able to trade for them. At the same time, somebody traded Luka Doncic and passed 2 other teams passed on completely. So who knows? But well, you know, those 2 guys are special.
Last year's draft, you know, the top of the draft were considered so elite. It was so hard to move up from 6 to the top 2 or 3. I think that, you know, I'm sure the Thunder really, really wanted Mobley by all appearances and for good reason. I do think those 2 guys that you're mentioning in the 2023 draft will be too hard to move up for, more than likely, unless they just want to absolutely, you know, unload the entire package.
Which might include Shea, by the way.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
But I think that going back to this year's draft, because, you know, there hasn't been anybody that's really stood out, even though Jabari is the consensus one right now. That's flip-flopped, and I think it's even now flip-flopping. Chet is kind of picking up steam, and so is Jaden Ivey. So this year's draft, maybe it's easier, you know, if the Thunder end up with the 6th or 7th pick to move up to the 4th pick than it was last year, because there's not such a clear-cut, you know, and these guys aren't considered on the same level as Cade and Mobley and Jalen Green were. Maybe, you know, they're considering on that level that Scotty Barnes and Jalen Suggs maybe were. Let's just say, for instance, maybe it's a little bit easier to trade up this year than it was last year. So maybe we see that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Oklahoma City should be trading up in almost every opportunity, maybe not trading 36 and 34 for 32 again. But in just about any other scenario, you know, you basically have to.
I think that the Clippers pick is going to end up being between like 11 and 15. I'd be surprised. Yeah. You know, hopefully it's higher than that, but you're looking at 11, 15. And the Thunder's pick, you know, could be anywhere from 1 to 8. I mean, it's such a high range right now. You know, hopefully they end up by all is said and done. I think that 3 is definitely doable. So let's say that you get the 12th pick from the Clippers and you're the fifth pick. I mean, and you really, really like the guy at number three. Does 12 and five move up to three this year? I think that's much more doable this year than it was last year.
I mean, and they're going to have pick 30 too, right? And I don't know how many second rounders. I mean, assume they have at least one or two second rounders.
Yeah.
I would do 12 and five for three. I mean, unless they just really love Shaedon Sharpe and Shaedon Sharpe's going to be there at five.
Right. Exactly. But
I would do 12 and five for three, probably.
One second round pick, their own. And then,
really?
Three first.
Did they not pick up any? How many? They have a million second round picks and only one this year. Well, that's going to be a top 35, 33 pick, though. So,
yeah. Right now, that's a
pretty good second rounder.
Yeah. All right. You guys got anything else on a rather quiet deadline for the Thunder?
The only other thing I say we didn't mention, that 76ers pick from 2025, we haven't confirmed yet. It may be unprotected in this whole Ben Simmons, James Harden trade.
No, Bobby Marks had that. It's the same protections as before. Honestly, after reading the tweet, I still didn't understand it. But it's not an unprotected pick.
Okay.
I think if it doesn't convey, then like it's still the Thunder's, and if it doesn't convey for those 3 years, then like Brooklyn gets it the next year. But if it does convey in 25, then Brooklyn gets 27. I think is how it works. But it's not an unprotected pick, according to Bobby Marks.
What I would say about this trade deadline, the Thunder obviously only made one move, but I really like changing that Miami pick. It's going to be kind of nice. They could still do something. Maybe they do a deal like they did with Gabriel Deck last year, or, you know, maybe they take on a dump before the end of the year, a salary dump. But if these players, this particular group of high effort, high energy, very low paid players end up getting a bonus, that's really cool for them. Obviously, ideally, you would have preferred to hit the salary floor by taking on a contract and getting picks. I'm very happy that they were not involved in that Tobias Harris deal. That made no sense whatsoever to me from the OKC side, nor from the 76ers side. I just think it would mess up this year's draft pick for the Thunder. You're tied down to a Harris pick for 3 years. Even, you know, the 76ers, I didn't see how they were going to give picks to the Thunder, give picks to the Nets. You know, it just didn't make any sense. So, but I'm glad to see that that didn't happen. It was quiet for the Thunder, but that's okay. They've had a lot of fireworks the last couple years. They could still make some moves. And for now, you can kind of focus on the 2022 draft and hoping that you get as good a pick as you possibly can.
Yep. Maybe Shea or Giddy can give you that loan.
Hey, they got some extra coin.
With that extra money. What is it, like $2 million each? I mean, we'll see who else they sign, but.
It's like $1.5 million. That's going to double Lou Dort's salary this year. That is crazy. Like when you think about it, you know, it's cool from the standpoint of all these guys are like either like undrafted guys, second round guys, you know, for a lot of players, they're making $20 million, $25 million a year. And they've been doing that for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. But for this particular group of players, $1.5 million bonus, that's like life-changing type money for some of these guys.
I was just talking to a friend earlier, like towards the right as the deadline ended, and it looked like they weren't going to do anything. It was like, well, like if I'm Clay Bennett, Mr. Bennett, of course, if I'm him, I'm like, look, Sam, if you can get a great first round pick to take on salary, do it. But if not, I would love to give these dudes extra money. Would love
100%. 100%.
Shout out Lindy Waters too, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then that's 2A.
Born and bred.
He's a fun, like, hometown boy. He was born in Norman, played at OSU, played for an Enid semi-pro team, played for the OKC Blue, and now gets a 2A with the Thunder. He's, like, getting the entire Oklahoma hoops experience. And he shoots, like, 48% from three. Like, he is an insane three-point shooter. And he's probably going to get minutes. You're going to see him on this Thunder team. This, yes. As they explore the roster, they're absolutely going to give minutes to Lindy Waters, the third down the stretch.
Come on.
I've been looking for the next Charlie Brown also.
Yes.
I think it's Lindy Waters.
Yes. Hey, Brandon, how much to get you to try out for that Enid semi-pro team?
Dude, I would love it. I don't want to say anything, but if we're talking about leagues, I know that I shot right around 48% from three in the Bethany pickup church. Like, it was like an actual league. What was it called? It was like at Southern Nazarene University. They had like a Bethany league. I was probably shooting about 48% from three.
48?
Now, or 40? Now, don't look at my like rebounding numbers or my defensive rating or anything like that. Anything other than my 3-point shooting.
Water Pistol was, Pete Jr.
Yeah.
How is Michael Cage's jumper? Is it still looking?
I was just about to say, I can't believe we're referencing church leagues right now. This is great.
Oh yeah, I should also mention that we didn't win a single game. So, because there were dudes that were like the Michael Cage's, like there's like a couple OU like walk on players that were in that league and stuff like that. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And I think they just like, oh, we'll let this short old white dude shoot some open 3-pointers. That's fine.
Brandon's out there pump faking on Eduardo Nahara.
Yeah, exactly.
Shout out a Boomer Sooner there. Okay. That wraps us up. Spencer, thanks so much for joining us. We will have you back. We will have you back as soon as your schedule allows, because we have this is kind of when Thunder season picks up. You know what I mean? This is the time of the year. So, Brandon, thank you as well, man.
Absolutely. It was fun, guys.
All right. Blush. Thunder fans, thank you so much for listening. We will be back very soon with some more updates on this Oklahoma City Thunder season and the NBA season. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of the week. We'll talk to you soon. Hey, Hoopheads, we appreciate you listening to this episode of Daily Thunder. Be sure to check out other NBA pods on the Hoopheads Podcast Network, including Cavalier Central, Nuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Spanning the Spurs, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, At the Buzzer, and Lakers Fast Break. There are also coaching-focused podcasts, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachesMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and Courtside Culture. Oh, and don't forget the network's flagship, the Hoopheads podcast, hosted by Mike Klensing and Jason Sunkel, and featuring the best minds in the game, from its grassroots to the NBA.